What's up? It's your boys Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend, and I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. If you're listening on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars, and feel free to reach out to us at our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, or on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We look forward to hearing from all of you. Now, this week, we had what, chapter 1122 come out,
Bro,
I
1122, bro. Bro,
1122.
you know you the word plays on 1122. That's crazy.
What's the
I
wordplay on
don't
1122?
even actually know. I don't think there's anything. I just wanted to say something crazy about the numbers, man. Well, that's hockey, bro. That's big
That's hockey.
hockey. I'm serious.
Okay, I got you. That's crazy. The chapter's title is "The Time Is at Hand," and boy, was it was I. This was actually, I felt like this chapter was a breath of fresh air after the last couple we had had, just because it was the last 6 or 7 chapters just kind of felt like the same content being stretched out slowly, and now I feel like we're finally moving forward with the plot. We're about to get off of Egghead. We see Joy Boy for the first time. There was a lot of things that were pretty hype about this chapter. What did you think about this chapter?
A mixed bag for me. Like, there were some really cool moments. I love the scene with the Sunny flying across the sea with towards the Elbaf ship with all the Elder Stars flying at it. The scene with the Conqueror's Haki was pretty exciting, but I'm still kind of like would like something more to happen besides just being Vegapunk's reveal. I want a little bit more as far as how this is going to actually move the story forward. I think there's still a potential to get that, maybe with, we're going to talk a bit more about Saturn being left alone at the end, but I'm not, there's some cool moments, but I don't love this chapter.
Okay. So why don't you give me a rundown about what happened this week?
Well, so we start out with pirates across the world, and even an Impel Down, excitedly reacting to Vegapunk's speech, feeling the fate of the world depends on pirates. At Marine headquarters, Kobe hears the news, reflecting on his Romance Dawn conversations with Luffy and resolves, Luffy, I have to stop you from achieving your dream. Abraham, I know you might not have thought this was that interesting yourself, but I personally thought it was really interesting. Obviously, Kobe has known he would eventually be enemies with Luffy because of his role as a Marine. We saw that in Marineford. We saw that even when he made Luffy punch him at the very beginning of the series. But in the context of Vegapunk's speech, this feels like a more serious type of resolve than we've seen from him before. It has me wondering if members of S.W.O.R.D. have a deeper understanding of the nature of One Piece. What do you think about this possibility? And is there anything more you want to know about what I'm thinking about?
Sure, yeah, I mean, you can clarify that. I guess I'll just say real quick that I don't think that's the case. I feel like all we know about Sword so far, it's granted there's not a whole lot we know about Sword so far, but to me it just feels like a group of Marines that are dissatisfied with how, the Marines handle, justice and enforce the world government's law. Like you see, like basically like Fujitora on Dressrosa, like his unhappiness about what he had to do and what his role was in that whole situation, right? I don't really think that Kobe saying this implies that there's any kind of extra information that he has. That's why I didn't find it that interesting of a moment, because he's just to me defining what his role is in the story, and we all knew that he's a Marine. We all know that Marines are going to be hunting pirates. I don't know. It felt like a lot of just stating the obvious to me.
What feels interesting about it for me, because obviously the idea that as a Marine he would have to stop Luffy from becoming Pirate King or finding the One Piece seems obvious from the beginning. But I think that the level of seriousness with which he's talking about it in terms of it's something that he really has to do makes me feel like there's a little bit more behind it than just, oh, I'm a Marine, you're a pirate, we're on opposite sides of this thing. I think as we learn that finding the One Piece is going to have greater implications for people around the world, that whatever decision might happen at Laugh-Tale is something that could actually end up affecting average people, people living in different nations, people that the Marines are essentially there to protect. That implies to me a sense of finding the One Piece could be something that could be catastrophic for a lot of those people. And it becomes, in particular, more, it becomes particularly important to stop someone from being able to have that kind of power. I think when we, given what we know about someone like Garp, who you sort of say, why in the world would Garp decide to protect the Celestial Dragons? And given that we know he's potentially involved with Sword, I mean, certainly it seems like he's involved with them, given that he trained Kobe, he had a relationship with Aokiji, whether or not Aokiji's actually a member of Sword, we're not really sure. But it strikes me that there might be a reason that a lot of these people who love justice, even as they get closer to the answer, I guess you could say, I'm going to stick with the Marines instead of going a different route. Aokiji obviously chose a different route, but someone like Garp has chosen to stay there and protect Celestial Dragons. And I think it sort of makes me wonder if there's some kind of, like, if Garp shares some amount of information and it's sort of like we actually need something about the apparatus of the Marines to be a figure that can protect these people, because if someone does achieve their dream, particularly if it's someone like Blackbeard, obviously, or someone like Rocks who is fighting to actually achieve it, we really need the force that is the Marines to be standing here to protect regular people.
That's gonna be true even if someone like Luffy becomes the Pirate King, regardless of who becomes. Like, let's say someone like Luffy becomes the Pirate King and dismantles the world government, right? You see what happened to, for example, Fishman Island after Whitebeard died, right? It was ransacked by pirates. It was like a horrible time for that island because there was no one protecting that country, right? So the Marines, like, I think the reason why you have a character like Fujitora written into the story is because he is going to be like the moral compass of the Marines going forward, in my opinion, after the Straw Hats dismantle the world government, right? I think the reason why you have someone like Kobe is probably too young at this point, but down the line is probably going to assume that role as he gets older and gets stronger, right? The reason why I think
Yeah, he
people
was doing
like
some pretty strong stuff on Hachinosu over there on Beehive.
Kobe,
Okay, he
Kobe is cool, but he's not close to that level, bro.
hey, he was doing some pretty
We
strong
can get
stuff,
into
man. Yeah, he was
this
doing some pretty strong
another
stuff.
week,
Hey,
but
I'm
people
just saying,
overhype
he didn't,
Kobe.
don't be sleeping on my guy. Don't be
No,
sleeping on my guy.
people overhype Kobe like it's nobody's. And I get it. People love Kobe because he's been around longer than any of the Straw Hats have been around. But people over we don't need to get into this. That's a whole nother discussion. As for some like it's the reason why someone like Garp would have stayed with the Marines to this point is for that reason as well, right? Like I feel like someone with a good heart like Garp probably looks at the world and he's like, how can I have a like how can I have my like a lasting impact in terms of help with respect to helping people, right? And the Revolutionary Army obviously didn't exist when he was young because Dragon created the Revolutionary Army. And even though the Straw Hats are kind pirates who do a lot of good for the world, that is not the norm for piracy, right? So I think it was very reasonable for someone like him to be like, let me join the Marines, even if there are things that I have to do that I might not necessarily agree with. I think for the greater good, it would be better for me to be a part of the Marines than, to join any other group. And I think Aokiji's journey is going ha has mirrored Garp's in a lot of ways, except he's become even more disillusioned with what the Marines represent and has chosen to pursue a different path. And that's what we're gonna get from Aokiji's story going forward. But I
What
don't
I'll
think
say.
that's be I just I'll wrap up real quick, but I don't think that's because Aokiji necessarily knows something or Garp knows something about the what is on Laugh Tale. I think it's just based off of like Aokiji is making this decision based off of what he saw at Ohara, based off of, what he knows about Akainu and stuff like that, not because he has some kind of extra information.
I don't think that Aokiji has any type of extra information, but I do think that one of the ongoing themes of the series is sort of like, what is a person's journey towards finding the truth, and what is a person's journey towards finding what they think is justice? And I think that whatever we find at Laugh Tale is going to be something that sort of evokes some of those questions in a really deep way. Obviously, Aokiji's gone off on his journey. He said, "My search for the truth has led me to following the Blackbeard Pirates," and that's what I think is going to be eventually allow me to get closer to the truth and maybe even to my sense of justice. I'm not sure. I think at the very least, it's an interesting possibility of thinking about how, if whatever is at Laugh Tale is unleashed, if there might be real consequences, and that could be one of the things that, at the very least, is one of the things that would make Sword a much more interesting set of characters than it just being a bunch of people who are disillusioned with the Marines. But moving on, we're going to continue to see reactions from Cross Guild, Buggy inspiring his men, while Crocodile and Mihawk tell him sitting down. And then we shift over to the Blackbeard Pirates, with Katarina Devon holding Caribou in tow. Blackbeard demands to be brought Caribou and hear his information, saying, "I'll put him down if his info is a dud." What's your take here, Abraham?
Yeah, I mean the I think the Blackbeard Pirates are out here just slowly behind the scenes getting stronger and accumulating information. Like the main info that Caribou has to offer, I think, is that Shirahoshi is Poseidon, right? And maybe Blackbeard will use this info to raid Fishman Island in the same way that he raided Whole Cake Island, right?
So he raided Whole Cake for the Poneglyphs, and he would be going down to Fishman Island to take
He
Shirahoshi
also, but he also raided Whole Cake. He raided Whole Cake
for pudding as well.
for pudding, right? Because he already had Big Mom's rubbing from Law, from defeating Law, right? Like, so it wouldn't feel all that different. It would be easier to go to Fishman Island, to be honest, like than to break into Whole Cake and so, yeah. If he, I don't know if he would necessarily be able to control Shirahoshi. Maybe if, he like also captured her brothers or something like that and held them hostage and was like, "Hey, you got to work for me now or else I'm going to kill your family." Like something like that. I don't know, right? But obviously if the Blackbeard Pirates show up on Fishman Island, it's a wrap. Like
Are the fishmen like extra strong underwater? Can they hold any? Here's the thing. I forget everything that happened in Fishman. I
Zoro
just
defeated
forget.
Horty under Zoro was on Horty was on steroids and Zoro one-shot him
Man,
underwater.
was he even actually strong? I don't even know how actually strong he was, man. I can't even remember anything about Fishman Island. That whole arc was terrible. Anyone
Horty
who puts that in
Horty
the top three,
the
I'm not gonna say that they might be smoking anything, but I
who has
disagree. I
Fishman in their
disagree.
top three?
I don't know, man. You talk about it like it is.
I just have to protect Fishman Island from people who who are haters, bro.
It's a
the
lot of
Fishmen
people
have
that.
their one arc. They have their one arc and people just love to put it down.
It's a lot of people just hating on Fishman Island. But I do think that it's interesting, the idea of Blackbeard not only trying to bring together the Poneglyphs and be prepared to go to Laugh Tale, but also to get to see him getting closer and closer to actually bringing together ancient weapons. Do we know how close he is to Pluton?
I mean, he. I don't think he has access to Wano, right? I don't know how would he be able to get there. So I don't think he has access to Pluton.
Okay, because I felt like there had been some kind of conversation about that before. It would certainly be interesting if he was actually able to get to Shirahoshi and see like what the implications of having multiple of the weapons are. But I know there's been a lot of conversation about, okay, maybe it's going to be Blackbeard's going to get Poseidon, the Straw Hats are going to have access to Pluton, and the world government, for example, might end up having Uranus, and we're going to end up having a sort of like three factions, each with one ancient weapon fighting for control of the world. You think that's a possibility that this is kind of seeing us getting
Yeah,
closer to?
absolutely could be. I mean, especially because, I mean, Frankie has the blueprints for the Pluton basically memorized before he burnt them, right? Like, I feel like if he wanted to, he could build the Pluton at any point. So, yeah, I could see that for sure.
So we'll return to battle, where the Iron Giant is under siege from the Elder Stars as he makes an apology to Joy Boy. I failed to make him king. As he asks Luffy's name, remarking that Luffy looks like Joy Boy, Emmett unties his belt, unleashing a massive Conqueror's Haki attack across Egghead that knocks out almost all of the Marines, even pressing Vice Admirals, and sends Emu into a screaming fit as a servant comes running. Joy Boy, we see Emu think in their last panel this chapter.
Yeah, that was quite a display of hockey. How did I don't know. We had some people in the group chat that weren't quite that excited to see that, you know, this was what the giant robot was built up to. And it did feel a little bit underwhelming because it wasn't really a thing that the giant robot did. It was like a thing that Joy Boy did, and it was also like, you know, can you really just store haki like that and then just you use it like centuries later? I don't know. I was saying in the group chat that I think it's believable because we've seen in things that we would otherwise find kind of intangible to be stored in dials and whatnot, right? Like you can store the force of like of a
Right.
punch in like an impact dial, right? And
Right.
you know, I don't know, haki in this world, even though it is a manifestation of your willpower, right? It does manifest as like a physical like energy. So, you know, it didn't seem like a huge ass pull for me, but I do know that a number of people had took issue with it. I don't know, what did you think about that haki display?
So I guess I have two responses. One about whether it kind of feels out of nowhere, and one about how impressive I felt it was. I'll start with how impressive it was, because I think that's a more fun one to talk about. Like, I think this just would have been so much cooler. You know, we had talked about the Iron Giant, about Emmett, like, you know, nuking himself, right? Or blowing himself up in some kind of suicide attack, or doing some kind of really dramatic thing. He had this awesome panel earlier where he got out and, like, was it Mercury that he punched in a pretty sick double spread? And, like, you couldn't think of anything better, Oda, than untying a knot. You know what I'm saying?
I
Like,
mean, I don't know,
I
like.
just feel like whatever this was, it would have been so much cooler if whatever he had to do to actually activate it felt like it was something with a kind of dramatic and impactful flourish, right? Like, I'm trying to think of, I mean, it's like when what's like in Yu Yu Hakusho. Wait, you didn't watch Yu Yu Hakusho, did you?
I did.
Oh, you
I
did.
just
Okay. It was
I
someone
didn't
else that
enjoy
did.
it as much as other people did.
Okay, well, that's because that, yeah, okay. Man, you got some problems. You know, we can go into some, we can talk to, I got a friend who's a therapist. We can talk to them, see, you know, check in if you got anything wrong with you. But but the spirit cuffs, you know, the moment you just get as the spirit cuffs, right? It's sort of like it feels a bit more built up. Like, the moment where he does it feels like it's a bit more of this, like, exciting panel, even just like the action of doing whatever he does when he breaks them before the whole phoenix of aura starts flying around the arena, is kind of exciting and fun, and gives us a sweet panel for the release before we actually see the effects of it. The Dragon of the Darkness Flame is another one where you kind of, like, have the whole Hiei sitting standing around having his whole arm get twirled by a dragon, and now his hair is standing up and he's getting the aura around him. And if we had something like that, I probably would have felt like this whole Conqueror's Haki release was way more epic. Instead, it was just in a tiny little panel, a knot just going like boop. And it was not even in the main panel. It's just a tiny little panel in the side, boop. And now there's all kinds of Conqueror's Haki. Like, what kind of release is that, Abraham?
Yeah, I mean, It's true. It could have, it probably could have been like hype. I don't even want to say hyped up because it was the moment was hyped up already. That's kind of why you probably feel this way, where it was just like, is this the time to use that Joy Boy? Blah blah blah. I think what it comes back to is what I was saying these last couple of weeks, where it's like, yeah, I don't expect the Iron Giant to kill any of the Gorosei because the Iron Giant is not an important character in the series. Like, yes, he was a member of Joy Boy's crew. Yes. He's, you know, playing his role in this arc. But the reason why I thought he wasn't going to kill a Gorosei was because this is just some random character that is only going to be contained within this one arc. He's not going to have some lasting impact in the rest of the series. Kind of like Pedro in Whole Cake Island, right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
So.
That was all same kind of thing, honestly, where he just it was like, oh, did he really just blow himself up? Like, I wish they could have you could have given him at least one epic panel of him blowing himself
Yeah,
up instead of
but
just
so I
like
guess
boom.
I was not that surprised by this,
Like,
right?
bro,
Because it just
Pell didn't even die and he got a way more epic panel than either of these dudes.
Yeah,
You know
but that
what
was kind of different, right? That
I'm
was Pell. That wasn't like an attack he launched. That was like him, you know what I mean, blocking somebody, you know, like Crocodile's bomb and stuff. I don't know. It was a slightly different situation, but I get what you're saying. You could have like Oda could have He could have come through on that moment more. I do think Oda
Yes.
overhyped what we were going to get from Emmett.
Right, and I'm saying
And
I don't think it would have felt overhyped if he actually would have given us like a couple panels of build up and like a sick like in the same way that we saw that panel of him
right.
punching Mercury. If him
Yeah.
releasing the haki was something like that instead of a tiny little side panel of a little knot getting untied, I feel
Yeah.
like this chapter would have had way more gravity.
Sure. Yeah, I'm saying it's overhyped because we didn't get that, right? We got what we got. Right? Like we got the knot getting untied. Like that's why I'm saying it. You know,
Yeah.
it's like this is the reality of the situation, right? As for like the display of Conqueror's Haki, I was saying so one, the fact that Imu reacted like this to me suggests that Joy Boy was probably way stronger than Imu back in the
It
day.
really made me think that Emu was really weak and not actually a physically strong character, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It might have, yeah, maybe Imu was weak at some point, and like, you know what I mean? Like he had to do some duplicitous stuff in order to defeat Joy Boy or something like that. I don't think Imu is gonna actually be. I think Imu is gonna be the like extremely strong when we eventually fight him because
Do
it's
you?
freaking Imu.
Right.
Do you? Let me ask you. Do you expect Imu to be weak?
I wouldn't say I expect Emu to be weak, but this made me think about that possibility a lot more, as if Emu is the kind of ruler who is sitting atop the throne not because of their strength. Now, that would be pretty antithetical to One Piece, although Orochi would actually be an example of someone like that. Or wasn't,
Yeah,
I'm
but
pretty sure that there was some other monarch who was like a fake monarch or whatever, who I don't think was strong. I think I'm, unless I'm misremembering something, but you know, Orochi would be an example of that. And just, I've never seen anyone react to Haki this kind of way who's actually strong, although it could potentially just be a reaction to the specific person's Haki that they're encountering.
Green Bull reacted to Shanks's hockey like that at the
Interesting.
end of Wano. Yeah,
I
I
would be
don't know.
interested to go back and look at that again because
Yeah.
Greenbull did kind of freak out about Shanks' hockey. You're right.
Yeah, and the last thing I just bringing up Shanks real quick that I want to talk about this situation is that it also made me think about the possibility that Oda has been planning this end game out for like decades upon decades. Because when I think about the Elder Stars being like reverse summoned by this crazy Conqueror's Haki, and the red-haired pirates being a crew that have you know specialized in just becoming haki like these powerful haki masters as opposed to using devil fruits. It's like, you know, did Shanks necessarily know about you know this flooding plan? So he recruited people maybe who are not hammers, you know, who don't have devil fruit powers, you know, to be a part of his crew. Maybe he knew that. Maybe that the key to defeating these Gorosei is going to lie within like the strength of your will, and that he needed these strong Conqueror Haki users to be on his crew. I don't know, right? But This is not obviously, it's not necessarily proof that Oda was like building up to this from the beginning, but it seems like Shanks's crew is, if all of this is true, is like the crew that is perfectly set up to challenge the world government, right?
That's true. And once again, I know I've mentioned this before, but Oda in one of the early chapter or volume covers has Luffy wearing a shirt that says Tamago Jiken, which means egg incident. So I agree that this is something that's been planned out for a long time. It definitely seems, at the very least, related to the reason that Shanks's crew might have no devil fruit users, certainly potentially related to exactly how much they freaked out about Luffy eating the gum gum fruit slash Nika fruit. And it makes me also wonder about Blackbeard, who is taking an actually like completely opposite approach to creating a crew. The other character who seems like he's actually going to be involved as a part of this end game is someone who has an all devil fruit crew. Luffy's kind of half and half. I don't know. Are we going to show up at Tequila Wolf Anagram for One Piece floats? I don't know. Interesting.
Oh man,
Word.
I feel like Tequila Wolf has been forgotten, but yeah, I don't
Yeah,
know.
we need to talk more about Tequila Wolf at some point. There got to be some good Tequila Wolf theories out there because that's going to end up being an important part of the end game, I
Okay.
think. The one last thing I'll say as far as the Conqueror's Haki that makes it feel, I think at some point in the story, I know I've been talking about this basically from around the time Vegapunk's reveal started, but I do think that at some point we're going to get a better explanation of what Haki is than just some abstract concept of willpower. And I think that once we do that, we might have an understanding for exactly why it's so important and exactly why it's, as Kaido said to Luffy, the thing that you need to rule the seas. Anyway, we're almost, oh, with the Elder Stars gone, the Sunny lands safely on the water as everyone wonders how the robot's Haki attack made the Elder Stars vanish. We go back to Emmett to see the last one of the Elder Stars, the one and only Saint J. Garcia Saturn, remaining on Egghead, standing across from Emmett, breathing heavily. Abraham, Saturn got left behind. What do you make of
I saw some people talking online like how about how it made sense because he was the only Gorosei to actually sail to the island, whereas the other ones were the ones that were summoned there. So, you know, maybe them being summoned there meant that their presence is not as permanent, right? Like Saturn was physically there, whereas they were, you know, yeah. And now that I'm saying that, maybe them being summoned there meant that they weren't as strong as they otherwise would have been if they had been like 100% physically there. I didn't really think about that until this crossed my mind right now. But I think the big takeaway that this happened to me for me was that we know the Blackbeard Pirates, or specifically Catarina Devon, has the ability to, you know, impersonate the people that she's like touched and stored because of her devil fruit. And we know that she's touched Saturn and that Saturn is being abandoned here. So it feels like we're getting set up for the Blackbeard Pirates to infiltrate the Mirzwa's as Saturn and do some work from the inside, right? In terms of, I don't know. I don't want to necessarily say dismantling the world government, but just like, yeah, maybe they're gonna show up to the Mirzwa's and learn some things that other pirate crews don't have access to, or kill some Gorosei, something like that, right? Like it feels like that's what's being built up for them at this point.
that sort of end game, I think, would be really interesting. I really like the idea that you brought up of them getting some kind of information that's going to make help them have a key piece of information in terms of how to react to whether it's whatever they get at Laugh Tale, whether that's whatever they get at Tequila Wolf, whether it's something that helps them get to Laugh Tale or like navigate some of the secrets of it. We know that Blackbeard said that he wants the world, or the Catarina Devon, I guess, said that Blackbeard
Wonderful.
wants the world. And it makes me sort of wonder, that makes me think about what that means. I think that's something that the Elder Stars undoubtedly understand what that means. And I think that in terms of figuring out the keys to being able to have that, you're going to need some kind of information that is probably very closely guarded by the Elder Stars and people who are in that kind of cadre.
Yeah.
I'll say that, I'm still hoping that Saturn gets defeated. I need a little something more than this. I need
I
a little
mean,
something.
it would honestly kind of make sense at this, like it
And it
would
would
make
open the
sense.
door for exactly what you're saying to happen, because if
Exactly.
Saturn
Yeah.
just shows back up and he's not defeated, then it's kind of just like,
Yeah. But I don't know.
do you not think that that panel of Emmett looking at Saturn looks like a dude who's about to nuke himself and kill a guy, take a guy with him? Like, come on now.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think Emmett is kind of done.
Yeah, bro, he's done. So he's like, I'm done. I'm gonna take you with me.
Like I said, Emmett is not taking out a Gorosei. At least not in my opinion. This is one of the five, like right-hand men of Imu. Emmett's not an important enough character to get one of those
Man, we don't
kills.
even care about him, man. We don't even know. We barely know anything about him, man. He's new.
Exactly. That's why he's not going to do this.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking about something my mom said once that just got me cracking up about Nu. I'll tell you after the show.
Okay.
The final scene of the chapter is a conversation between Joy Boy and Emmett, in which the straw hat wearing caped, totally not a giant sized Joy Boy shadow, gives Emmett, at this point, dressed like one of the giants from Elbaf, his knot with the hockey for some time in the future. I hope I don't get lonely, heh. Emmett recalls thinking 800 years ago in front of the flames of Egghead as the chapter closes. What's your reaction to this flashback?
Yeah, you pointed out one thing that Joy Boy doesn't really look giant, right? And Oda's not always great with drawing things to scale and whatnot, but I think it's pretty clear that Joy Boy looks just like a
Normally,
regular.
giants look like a different size than regular people.
Yeah. He Joy Boy looks like a regular sized human. So, Josh was saying, who does the giant straw hat belong to if Joy Boy wasn't a giant? And it's like, I think I said maybe Imu is a Tontata, and that's like a regular straw hat, and he just looks giant because Imu's really, really tiny. Or maybe Joy Boy, he also could do like a had like the Nika Nika powers and could when he because like Luffy's straw hat will transform to match whatever size he is. I swear, like he'll like go gear third, and his straw hat will like, yeah, balloon to like match the size of his head or whatever. So I don't know, maybe it's something like that. I don't know. That's what I thought. That was the one thing that I thought about from this flashback, that Joy Boy doesn't look as big as his hat necessarily does. And oh, there was no reason for Oda to draw a gigantic hat in that throne room or whatever, right? Like he could have just drawn a regular sized straw hat and we would have. So it, yeah.
It is interesting. And what I'd say that I think is interesting as far as the size of that straw, that giant straw hat we saw in Marajaw, is you do see that Emmett is dressed like someone from Elbaf in this chapter. Obviously, he's a giant, or in this flashback, obviously, he's an iron giant, like a giant robot. But it does make me wonder if there's any sort of, relationship between. Like what the special relationship between Joy Boy and the Giants look like, if that's in any ways connected to Emmett, and if that's going to
Right.
have any kind of implications for the rest of the story. Honestly, and I don't think this is what's going to happen. It even reminded me a little bit of the scenes between Ace and Orz, where Ace is making him the little hat from Wano. I'm like, what if Joy Boy made a hat for one of the Giants, and that's where the giant hat came from. Definitely, this scene kind of reminds me of that, but it
Yeah.
does seem clear that he has a special connection with the giants. I'm curious if you see anything about Emmett's connection with the giants. It's interesting.
I think the ancient kingdom in general had connections with all of these non-human races, right? Like that's something that we've gotten from the series, right? Whether it's the fishmen, the minks, the Tontara, like the giants, that they, yeah, that they represented a kingdom that, brought together all of these unique species and races in order to kind of live in harmony, whereas the world government feels like a I don't know, a group that, promotes like Like there are hierarchies to these races, you know, like there's the celestial dragons and there's the humans and then all of the non-human races that, you know, are like below them.
Do you think there's anything about, do you think there's anything though about the about Emmett being connected to the giants that could have implications for the story? I don't know that I necessarily have something in mind, but I
I
really
mean,
thought it was interesting.
if Joy Boy has all these allies with all of these different nations or races, it could just be that there's a representative or whatever of each of these races on his crew, right? Like if Zunisha is supposed to maybe represent the connection to the Minks, if maybe Emmett is supposed to represent the connection to the giants, you know, I don't know, right?
I mean, maybe Usopp's gonna connect with Emmett, because Elbaf's gonna be Usopp's arc, apparently,
Usopp will connect with the giants. Emmett is done. We're moving on and we're sailing away from from Egghead.
How old are Dory and Bragi? Are they around 800 or not? Not that.
They're probably around 150 to 200 years old, I think, right? Because they were fighting on
That's
long.
perfect for your harem.
Yes.
I was just setting that up. Let's move on to awards. We give awards to noteworthy moments in the chapter you might have missed. Abraham, what's your award this week?
Oh man, my award is the best boss award, and I'm gonna give it to Buggy for his ability to get the troops to believe. But he's just like, it's not my dream, it's our dream, you know. You should want to have a boss like Buggy who makes you feel important and inspires you to want to be great.
That was a pretty cute moment from him where they're all like, "What, Chairman Buggy?" And he says, "Our world," and they all go absolutely nuts. I think that was absolutely a good one. It's also still interested in just this use of the world. I wish I could see it in Japanese, but as far as like Blackbeard wanting the world, Buggy saying it's our world, I'm just so intrigued. This it brought up a lot for me. My award is also going to Buggy, but I'm actually giving him the Little Man Syndrome Award. Because it's like he look at his outfit, man. Look at his outfit. Like it's he, like it, that's got to be like 90% empty, and like his torso just like flying around in there, and it's just like a cloth that makes him look like a sloth with his hands out somewhere, and I guess his feet. I mean, maybe his feet are just being floated in there so he can fly because his feet are the one thing that can't fly. But I just found this outfit like completely hilarious and ridiculous, given that it's not actually how big he is. The little man syndrome goes to him, especially after watching him get talked down to by Mihawk and Crocodile, the actual strong guys in the crew.
Sounds about right to me.
Okay.
So I think it's that time to get into the to get into our harem.
All right. Alex, you want to kick us
Alex,
off?
yeah.
Yeah, sure thing. You know, we had a lot going on last week. Abraham, you were out. You guys did the last two drafts without me, and here you go, changing the rules.
We
Now you
did.
can pick any pirate.
We did change the
Well,
rule.
Alex,
We're
I'll say, you know what happened? I made my pick, right? And then Jordan went off script and picked a Marine, and I was like, you know, the rules were that we had to pick pirates.
I
But
thought Kobe was fine because you can put him
we're
on
like,
the
I was
Alvida
like, it's a,
Pirates.
yeah, I said it's okay. We can bend the rules. We don't really care about the rules.
And honestly, we both didn't want those rules in the first place.
Yeah.
No, I know,
So
but here's the
we
thing,
were
you
like,
know,
ah, we're just gonna go with it. We're just gonna go with it.
Jordan, you get a pass because you know you're a fast guy, right? You're a runner. But Abraham's out here trying to be an MD. And I put those rules in a couple of days before we recorded the show, and man,
It was kind of funny
I'm a dumb
because
athlete.
he picked Kobe, and I was like, you know, that kind of went against his rule, but it's cool. Then he picked Corazon, and I was like, you know, I already have like a Don Quixote pirate on my crew, right? But I was like, it's fine. I don't really care about that rule either. So then we're like, if we're just gonna ignore all of the rules, I might as well just take someone that I wanted to take anyway, and I pick Shanks.
Listen, I'm gonna, it would
Okay.
not, I would, it just does not make sense in a harem to be like, we cannot choose two from the same group. It does not make
No,
sense.
I know. I know. It's like,
We both together decided to ignore the rules that you had set. And we're both like, you know, Alex isn't here to fight for it anyway. So we're just gonna go off script.
it's interesting
Well,
because I would have ended up with Rayleigh if we would have gone with the, if we would have gone with the original one, but that's okay because, you know, I got an interesting, fun harem to give to our judges, the connoisseurs of men, Katie and Eric. And I just want to introduce my crew now. I want to introduce my crew.
oh,
So
you're not
I
going to
was,
let Alex do that?
what? I
Let
mean,
Alex do that.
well, I think we should introduce our crews. We should actually introduce the crews.
Okay, I mean, I that's fine. I feel like Alex was getting ready to do that, and you just took that from
It's all good. Just jump in. We got to
Sorry, Alex.
introduce our
Like I'm
judges.
introducing my crew. I
You
had
just took
changed the
him.
read already such that it was
Yeah.
going to be us introducing our crews.
We had a lot of crosstalk, so let's jump in.
Yeah.
So who I got on my crew? I'm gonna start with Zoro. Obviously I had Zoro to begin with, Law and Ace. I was told that I don't have enough emotional. I was told that I don't have enough emotional intelligence on my crew. And that all I have was men with abs. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not going to choose any men without abs. Like, that's just how it's going to be. Our crew is going to continue having abs all the way around, but we're going to add some emotional intelligence. And I think I just wanted to have a little bit of fun with some of my last picks and also add a little bit of, you know, some wild factor, I think, in the crew. So I think it's not going to be all incredibly conventional, but it's going to be fun, and I think it's going to give a little bit something, a little bit of flair and personality to it. After Zoro, Law, and Ace, the last two characters that I have drafted them up to my crew are Kobe, the man with the most beautiful glow up in the series and the deepest emotional intelligence of anyone, and my guy Corazon, who kind of has a freaky, a little bit freaky, you know, he going on kind of them goth vibes, but he kind of got the smoking thing. He's got the weird face paint. He's got some pretty hot fan art on the internet for people who are into that. And he's got, I know there's some people who are reading some fanfic about him out there somewhere. And you know who would go to any lengths for a young boy that he cares about
Because
who.
he's a predator.
Man, he's not a predator. He would go to any length for a young boy who he cares about, who's dealing with an illness, who's sick, and he has to get him healed however he can.
You know what's funny? I just crossed my mind right now. I Googled how do you know how old Kobe is?
19. Nah, don't say anything else. He's 19. 21.
He's 18 years old right now.
Okay, that's a lot better. That's better than I thought that was gonna be.
I crossed my mind. I was like, wait a second, is he, Jordan have children in his harem?
Yeah,
That's a whole nother set of problems. You just barely made it.
thank you, Abraham. Who's in your crew?
Yeah, I got I mean the three that you guys had already known about were obviously Ben Beckman, Rayleigh, and Senior Pink. You know, like I said, I had something in my harem for everyone at that point,
He
different
likes older
body
men.
types. Yeah, well, you know, I got some older men. I got some, middle-aged
Middle-aged
men. We've got some chunky boys, some guys with abs. Like it's just different body types, different all sorts of stuff. We didn't really have, I was told, any conventionally attractive men. So, you know, I got some conventionally attractive men for with my last two picks. I went with King from the Beast Pirates first. He also helped me get my, POC box ticked because, Kobe or not Kobe, Jordan's crew It's all white guys, so he doesn't have
Bro,
any
Zoro was
representation
literally
there.
Asian, bro. Like, what are you talking about?
Bro. Okay, then it's all Asian guys because it's all
Yeah,
like they
but
all look they regardless if they're all white or they're all Asian, they're all Asian, they're all Asian. There's
it
no diversity in Jordan's crew whatsoever. I still got, you know, a little bit of melanin on my crew with King, and he's just a beautiful man as well. And then I went with Shanks just again for the more conventionally attractive man for, you know, whoever happens to just be attracted to that type. And so that's how I rounded out my crew.
So just to remind our listeners once again, we've got two judges. We've got my wife Katie and Jordan's friend Eric. I just want to kick it over to both of you really quickly to reintroduce yourselves and remind us what your thoughts were last time. And then we can talk about the addition. So Katie, why don't you go first?
Sure. Hi. So I said last time I'll just introduce myself again this time. So you've heard I'm Alex's wife, and I've been reading One Piece for like 2 years. So last time I really supported Jordan's crew, the Law Ace Zoro combo. Mostly they have a variety of personalities, but also they are all very attractive. And then Abraham's crew, I think, had more of the heart, with Senor Pink and Rayleigh being a teacher, and Senor Pink, you know, being really there for his wife. Beckman not knowing as much about him, but yeah, overall Jordan's crew was more interesting and attractive. So do you want my opinions this week now too?
No, not yet. I want Eric
Okay.
to go ahead and jump in.
Perfect.
Yes, so just reintroducing myself, I'm Eric. I've been reading slash watching One Piece around like year and a half now. And I chose Abraham's more well-rounded harem. I feel like there was some variety in the personalities. You had like the stoic but mysterious Ben Beckman. You got Riley, who has been like a mentor to the Straw Hats, and you also got Senor Pink, who has like this tragic past, but he keeps trying to make things better for him and people around him. So very cool dudes, all very cool dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had a split before. Has your vote changed, Katie?
My vote has not changed. I think that Jordan did a
Oh,
really good job at picking characters with heart. I mean, Corazon is literally heart. So a
no.
lot of, yeah, a lot of like caring characters. So I'll say
He left.
Colby and Corazon are both like very hero characters. So Colby is known to everybody as a hero, and you know, society kind of looks up to him, which is really cool. Whereas Corazon is more of a hero to his found family in Law. I think he shows a lot of loyalty to that found family. He's not necessarily loyal to all family, obviously, because of Doflamingo, but I think that blind loyalty is not good. So his
Spit that.
loyalty to Law and his love for Law was just so sweet. And that kind of gives you
Yes.
the Senor Pink vibes of that strong connection.
Yes. And he's kind of a bad boy too. He's a bad boy with that heart. Like he's got the
He
bad
is
boy
a bad
vibes
boy.
with that heart.
He's
Which yeah,
a
that's perfect.
clown. He looks like a clown.
Yeah, but he's still attractive under all the makeup, so it's okay.
Have
And
you seen the clown? Have you seen the Corazon fan art online? Like I bet there is some crazy fanfic about him based on the fan art.
I have not seen it, but I bet it would be good. It also, so that reminded me with the clown makeup, Buggy, the character Buggy in the One Piece live action is like the most attractive character. So clown makeup can't necessarily
Oh,
ruin it for you.
wow.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, me neither. I need
I've
to look
talked
up
about it
the.
with my friends before. He's very attractive.
And that's like many people think that.
Yeah. For sure.
I'm looking up what he looks like right now because, I mean, he's a handsome dude without the clown stuff, and
He was also just a great actor in the show. Like his Buggy was probably my favorite character in the live action.
It's like something that makes you feel glad that Buggy's going to continue being a recurring character through the whole live action series.
Definitely, definitely. But sorry, back to the harem. I think the one kind of very small drawback, but a little weird thing to the harem is Corazon and Law being in the same harem. It's kind of like a father figure and a son. It's a little weird, but
That's really weird. That's a great point, Caitlin.
I'm
That's
willing
a
to look
great point.
past it because they're all great. Just yeah, kind of separate that a little bit in my head.
Listen, some people are into brothers, people are into sisters. If you've watched Ouran High School Host Club, there's an entire that's an actual harem, and in that harem, there is an actual couple twins where that's the whole dynamic.
Fair. That's
Wait, a
not what
couple
I'm
twins?
into.
Yeah, fair. Yeah,
Oh yeah, a
fair.
couple twins. That's interesting.
No, so a
Crazy.
couple like there's two of them because they're twins. There's a pair of twins who and
Oh, I
that
thought there
like
were multiple sets of
no,
twins.
it's
That
like
would have
that's
been
their whole
wild.
thing is they come up and they're like, they charm the women together because they're twins and that's their kind of like cuteness type of thing.
Thank you.
Plus,
Nice. Well,
Law and
hey,
Corazon, not even related by blood.
that's true. That's true. I want to give Eric a chance to jump in and see if his vote has changed. And Eric, if you're still feeling Abraham, we might have to let these two gentlemen try and sway one of you to see if we can get a winner here.
Ooh, well, the thing is, I think I feel Abraham's harem even more than before with these different choices. King is just the most beautiful man in all of One Piece. Like,
He
whenever he revealed his face, I was like, wait, what? Oda, oh my God.
is.
And Shanks has been an amazing character so far, the whole story. There's so much complexity to him being like someone who's nurturing and empathetic and like a good person, but also like there's a side to him that's very strategic, there's very mysterious. And yeah, I it's very difficult to compete with these two men that you just added. Also, I know that Oda said that Law is German, but that man's Mexican. Law is Mexican. Like, there's no other way. Like he lied. Like, Law is Mexican. Like, he cannot be. Like, maybe his parents are like both from Mexico and they went to Germany, but like that man can just not be Mexican. Like, yeah. But that's
Can
just
you be like
my thing.
Guatemalan? Is that okay? Because he does look a lot like Joaquin, and Joaquin's Guatemalan, you know?
Nah, he has to be Mexican. Like, my
Yeah,
man dances corridos. Just kidding. But yeah, I even with that, I still feel Abraham's a little bit more. I kind of understand like what you said. I think it'll be a funny scenario of like Law and Corazon like competing for your heart, like you know, like them being like rivals. I guess like some people are into that. Not me though. But yeah, Shanks and King definitely solidified it to me. So yeah, we'll see what you guys have to say to sue one or the other.
But
Yeah.
Katie, I just want to hear, I just want to, you know, you seem to really be enjoying that scenario of them competing for your heart. I started to see the fanfic writing itself on your face.
I feel like she said the opposite, that she said it would be weird to have Law and Corazon in the
Yeah,
same room.
that's not
I
what she
don't.
was saying with her face when Eric was talking.
No, I don't really like the competition. I want everybody to get along. That's just kind of my personality. Yeah, so no, I'm not for the competition amongst them.
Okay. Yeah,
I want a big, happy, loving family.
I was just a little because, you know, your face seemed to be at least enjoying the thought of it as Eric was describing that scenario.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
Like maybe I don't know, you know, we all have things that we say we want, and then we have the things that we secretly. Now I might be a little more a bit more open about some of the things that other people might secretly want than that I want. And you guys can take that into account when you all draft your women's harems for us in the future. But you know, I want to say, you know, I'm okay not having Eric's vote. It seems to me that Eric, it seems to me that Eric likes probably calling people daddy. He already said he likes. Fat dudes, and like we, you know, we have abs. Like, I chose a crew with abs. You got a lot of dudes with abs.
That's so superficial, abs are like bro.
The personality of my crew. We got some bad boys. We got some different personalities. You know, I don't even think about the senior.
Person. Everybody on my crew has abs except for senior pink.
Yeah, man, that's four people with abs. I got five people with abs.
Oh man, Katie, I feel like I can swing you over to my side. Like King is like Eric said at rest. He's just a beautiful, beautiful man. Like he's stunning. And then Shanks. I feel like is the. You think of like attractive One Piece man, and he's like the first one that comes to like everyone's mind. I don't know. I feel like even if you weren't physically attracted to the first couple picks, that you know you can have your physical relationship with some of those men in the harem, and then if you need someone to bond with emotionally, we have you know someone like Senior Pink. We've got someone like Rayleigh with all sorts of life experience, all sorts. There's something for you there. I don't know. I feel like I can bring you over to my side.
Yeah. So I'll talk about your two new picks too, because I didn't really mention them. So King, you know, I kind of forgot what he looked like, so I looked it up because he's always in his mask and his outfit, right? So. Yeah. But yeah, he is very attractive, I'll say that. And you know, the look in the mask and with all the, you know, like leather or whatever it is, people could be into that too. I think he's attractive, but we don't really know that much about his personality, right? We know he was used for his Lunarian blood, but I feel like I don't know if I would necessarily connect with him, especially because he looks up to Kaido, right? So kind of he's a bad boy, but not in the kind of bad boy that I like.
Got you.
And whenever he's about to make an attack, he makes a poopy face.
What?
Oh, I don't remember that.
He makes a poopy face whenever he's about to make an attack.
I don't remember that at all. Also, this is a harem. Why are we worried about him making an attack? why are we worried about him making an attack, Jordan? This is not a fight. This is a harem.
Listen,
how aggressive is the sex that you're having?
Poopy faces. That's all I'm saying.
How aggressive is the sex that you're having, Jordan, that you're worried about people, the faces people make when they launch attacks?
Listen, I've already said enough about what I like that it should be clear to you that like how rough the sex I'm sometimes having is. So
that's what I'm saying. You bring up his face he makes when he's making an attack. I'm just like, how is that relevant?
That's definitely relevant. That's definitely relevant. That's all I'm gonna say. That's definitely relevant.
Okay, I'll talk about Shanks now too. I think Shanks was a good choice.
There we go.
For all of the positive reasons we mentioned, except that he's kind of not really a family man, so he's just kind of off and doing his own thing. But you know, that's fine because you have a harem with like Senor Pink, so he can tend to that need. I think overall, like Abraham's group is more fun to hang out with and friendly. But Jordan's group is more just like overall attractive. And yeah, I don't think I'm going to be swayed from Jordan's group.
That's okay.
But good picks.
Thank you. Yeah. My crew is hot. That's all I'm saying. My crew is some hot men.
We do have the dead two members of the Deadbeat Dad crew on my harem, to your point.
That's what I'm saying. My crew got them men you think about in your special time.
Okay. Well, I guess we can leave it up to the audience to, you know, we'll put up a poll and leave it up to the audience maybe to be some tiebreakers, because it sounds like we've got a split vote here.
Sounds like it to me.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Yeah. Katie and Eric, thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank
And
you.
Thank you. It
we
was fun.
will hopefully see have you guys on here shortly. I don't want to. Should do you want to tease what our next draft is, Jordan, or do you want to kind of
I
keep
think I
that
might have even
hope?
said that we're gonna do the. I might even said a second ago a woman's
Okay.
harem, from our recent guests who just were judges.
I'm so excited for this. I'm
For
so
me and Abraham,
excited.
I guess you could say that we are the connoisseurs of women in this way. I mean, Abraham the connoisseur of his girlfriend. Okay, but to be judges and have the opportunity to review the picks that they have for us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I feel like I could tell you guys how exactly to win Jordan's heart with one pick if you guys want it, but I feel like that'd be unfair to whoever gets the first pick. So I'm gonna let you guys do what you want to do.
I know who
Jordan.
it is, and it's who I'm gonna pick anyway. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but we appreciate you guys for coming on today, and we'll have you guys on pretty shortly. Yeah.
Yes.
Should we move on to the Olympics, Jordan?
Yeah.
So I haven't been following it too closely, but Alex, yeah, you wanna
Sure thing. Yeah.
transition
So,
us over?
Jordan, as I mentioned earlier, you're an elite athlete. Doesn't mean you're not a reader. I just expected Abraham to read the fine print more. For year for years. Oh yeah. Jordan, have you been watching the Olympics? You know, there's a lot of track and field events going on. What events are catching your eye?
Yeah, man. Well, obviously the track. Obviously, we're watching the track. Had a great 10K final the other day. Josh Cheptegei won. The American had the first medal in I don't know, it was second medal, like I think ever in the 10K. Grant Fisher had a medal there, which is pretty exciting. I think one of the funnier things that happened over the beginning of the Olympics and oh, and of course my girl Nozomi Tanaka, my home girl from Japan, we hung out in Australia. Still text, Japanese Olympian, whatever, it's chill. Oh, all Japanese, by the way, no English, no English. And Abraham's face, I can't
I
even.
don't even know who you who the person that you brought up
That's
is. I
okay.
mean,
Just
I'm
watch the women's 1500 and see who the good Japanese athlete is, and that's who
just...
I, that's my home girl. That's my home girl. We're homies. But so I think one of the funnier things that happened in it was I don't obviously we talk a lot about, we've talked a lot about Shannon Sharpe over the years in this. And Rye Benjamin's a 400 meter hurdler. He's the second best 400 meter hurdler in the world. He has a chance of winning an Olympic gold medal. He was the second fastest runner of all time. The only guy to run faster than him is Carsten Warholm of Norway, who actually in the race that he ran the second fastest time, Warholm ran the world record in I think it was World Championships a couple years ago. Maybe it even was, it might have even been Tokyo. But Shannon Sharpe's account, Twitter, Instagram account sent a photo about Rye Benjamin, but it was a photo of someone completely different. And Rye Benjamin was like, "That's not me, Unc." Shannon said, "Nephew, somebody about to get five. So someone in the graphics department about to get five for this. My bad." It was just hilarious, man. So
Yeah.
hey. Entertaining Olympic stuff and the track happening early on. What
Okay.
about you, man? You watching anything?
No, I'm not, but there is so there's this one cyclist that I'll probably watch. His name is Biniam Girmay. He's an Eritrean cyclist. He's actually the first African to win the Tour de France. He won it this year. And he actually got
He
someone was
won the whole
asking.
thing? He won the Tour de France?
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
yeah, yeah. He
Dang,
also
bro, you
got.
told me he won a stage. You didn't tell me he won the Tour de France.
Or sorry, he won. Sorry, he won a Tour de France stage, but he also won the green jersey on,
Oh,
which
okay.
is like the prize that's awarded to the best sprinter in the tournament. Like he's
Right.
like a legit cycler.
That's it.
And bro, you just take my parents have been talking about him for literally for years. Just like,
Right,
like he's a hero to
I'm sure. Yeah.
And so I, you know, he'll be competing in the Olympics, and you know, I'm sure he'll make all of us proud. I did not really pay attention to cycling beforehand, but you know, you gotta come out and support your countrymen, you know. So there's that. I think he has an event today that I'm gonna try and watch.
I might have to
Other
keep an
than
eye
that,
out for him, man. That's kind of exciting. I didn't know that Eritrea had a dude in cycling like that. I've
he's
seen some
actually kind of
videos.
crazy. He had an interview after his like the events that he won at the Tour de France, where he said it's tougher to win the like Eritrean domestic competitions than it is to win the Tour de France, because you know, I don't, he might have just been like, you know, hyping up his own country and his own countrymen and what, but he was basically saying like, you know, Eritrea is a very mountainous country and you have a lot of phenomenal athletes within the country. And you know, he's very much, you know, he's very passionate about where he's from, and peep 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 every all the Eritrean people just love him. People like to say, I have Ethiopian friends who will be like, he's representing East Africa so well, and we're like, yeah, we're neighbors, but this is you can't claim him. He's Eritrean, he's not Ethiopian. So but don't let anybody try and tell you otherwise. This is an Eritrean athlete.
That's great, man.
And
Man, you know something, man? You represent Eritrea well with all East Africa well with all your American friends that all you got the most African looking American friends I've ever seen when I went to
ooh,
Fourth of July
that's
barbecue.
actually crazy. The one dude that you met that actually looked Somalian, I agreed with, but Evan did not look. I don't know what you thought. You were talking about how Evan looked African and stuff, and I was just like, bro.
Listen, man, I bet they were still all proud that you got this Eritrean cyclist, man. I bet they had, I think Evan has a little bit. The other dude definitely like they look like the Ethiopian dudes that I know and have run against for sure.
Yeah, other than that, I'll probably try and watch the Canadian men's basketball team as well, because we were in a tough group. Like, they called it the group of death, because it was Spain, who's always really good, Greece, who has Giannis, and Australia, who's always usually pretty good as well, and we went undefeated in that group. Like, Canada's got a legit squad this year. I don't think anyone's beating the Americans, because the Americans are just stacked. It's like
Of course.
unreal. It's un.
Yeah.
It's if the Americans,
USA.
yeah, I'm just saying, bro. It's like when the worst player off your bench is like Tyrese Halliburton or Bam Adebayo. It's like
Right.
you should be winning all these games by like 25 points. I don't really understand why they were struggling in the exhibition games. But yeah, I think Canada should medal in that event, and that'll be pretty cool to see.
Yeah, can't wait. So as far as competition goes, I would say, I just, I guess I want to do this read because I want to ask it in a provocative way. Abraham, you were talking last week. Some might even say you were gloating on this show, or taking a victory lap even about the terraforming Mars tournament that you're in with Alex. You would say you were talking about being the champion, how it's basically locked up, and you and Alex were kind of, had been
It's
going
not
at it,
true
but
at all.
there was basically nothing that could happen that could stop you from winning, is what you
Yes.
essentially said. You are gonna be the champion. You are the best at terraforming Mars in the group. Now, how is that working out for you right now?
Oh, first of all, I feel like you put a lot of words in my mouth that never came out of my mouth.
I could feel
Secondly,
them. That was the feeling I got from talking with
yes,
you.
the sentiment, the sentiment. Yeah. Secondly,
Poisson.
I'm still on top of the table. I'm still the number. I'm still with one game to go. I still have a 2-point lead. But you know, Alex did me pretty dirty in our last game, and I'm still emotionally recovering from the loss. To make a long story short, Alex won the game, and he won the game by like, you know, like 6, 7 points. It was pretty clear that Alex was going to come in first at the end of that last gen, but that I was going to come in second, and that Nick was going to come in third, who was the last player in our game. And if the game ended in that way, then I would actually, all the stuff you were saying would actually be true, because I would have a 4 point. I would basically be far enough ahead of the pack that regardless of what happened, I would at worst tie for first in the tournament.
But so what you're saying is it's not true currently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I'm saying you were putting words in my mouth before, because I never said that. But
Alex, so it would, you say he said some of that?
I don't know. I've gotten between you guys putting words in each other's mouths before, and it hasn't worked out. So. No, Abraham was very confident. He was very confident.
I was very confident. So it was not in Alex's best interest that I come in second place in that game. But what he did was something that I never expected to see in a game, where he intentionally like threw points away, like in order to reduce his score, in order to bump up Nick's score. To he basically artificially gave Nick like 3 points at the end of the game. First, he gave him 2 points, and I like managed to pivot and figure out a way to still finish ahead of Nick. And then Nick took his last action. He was done. I took my last action, and I was going to have the tiebreaker between us. And I was like, yes, you know, I managed to overcome Alex's like sabotage. And then 5 seconds later, I realized, I was like, wait a second. Alex is just going to give him another point by putting this tile there. And so Alex then gave him another point. And that ended up pushing Nick ahead of me by 1 point. So I came in third place. Like I said, I'm still ahead of everyone in the table by 2 points.
For now.
But it was a situation where I was sitting there and I was like, I couldn't believe what I had seen. It was almost as if, let's say you were running and like intentionally like threw yourself to the ground for whatever reason in order to make your time worse so that Julius could like you know, right, you like second place player and so that Julius could move from third to second or something like that. It was crazy.
Now, Alex, I want to hear like what inspired this deviousness from you. You know, it's very devious.
Oh, you know, I was just looking for any way for Abraham to come in third this game. So just to, I mean, I think our listeners need to understand that Abraham has been making videos, trash talking the rest of the group, just celebrating how far ahead he is. You know, he's always like added that little caveat at the end that, oh, you know, maybe it'll happen that I won't win, which now is like a bit more realistic. But I was just like, this man needs to be taken down a peg. So I was looking for options. I saw I could, lose some points to give Nick a couple points and maybe get him in the second place position. And I'm just happy that it's not a sure thing that Abraham is going to sweep the group. You know, I texted this man. I was like, you didn't want to just walk across the finish line, did you? You wanted to fight for your win. And he's like, no, I would be more than happy to saunter into first place.
Yeah, I wonder, because I feel like maybe if we saw some of those videos, it might be that we actually realized that the things I was saying might seem kind of tame to what Abraham was saying in the video. So maybe he didn't say the exact things I said, but I bet he might have said some things.
I'll tell you this. I quoted scripture in one of the videos. I had a whole Bible verse. Oh, man. I'll tell you the one thing that I low-key kind of regret in that game, because I'm a competitive person as well, right? So I didn't want – I knew that Alex was leading the game. And I knew I didn't need to win that game, Alex, as well, in order to solidify my position. I could, as long if I finished in second, like I was saying, everything would be good. And I was So there were a couple actions that I took against Alex, to try and slow him down because I still wanted to try and finish in first anyway. I was like, I don't want to just play for second. I want to play for first. And maybe in hindsight, I should have just been like, you know, I have enough points. Let me just sabotage Nick instead and, you know, cut my losses. But that felt anti-competitive, and I was like, I don't really like the idea of doing that.
Jordan, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this because that was my exact logic as well. I could have let the game fall as it would have, let Abraham get second, giving him the win. I don't think we would have been able to stop him. Oh, there would have been a path, but it would have been a hard last game. But
Listen.
this way, I'm fighting Nick a bit harder to get second, maybe first, but I'm running for the top spot, not for number two.
Yeah.
Listen, the first thing, I obviously love everyone trying to be a champion. That's the most important piece. The second
Exactly.
thing is, I understand where Abraham's coming from because if you talk the trash like this, you have to understand the risks that people will
Yeah.
want you to lose. And you have to be okay with the fact that it might come back to bite you, and then you're gonna look like a big old dummy.
Yeah.
But the glory of being able to gloat in that way is worth it tenfold.
100%.
So I encourage everyone continue trying to be champions, continue trying to gloat, and may we come back with some more drama to talk about in a couple of weeks about this. But that's what we have for time. That's our show. Thanks, Eric and Katie, for joining us for the Harem Draft. Hopefully, this won't be the last time we see you on the pod. I'm feeling that next draft next week. Thank you to Alex, your friend who produces this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. And as we're on break next week, come back next Sunday for our S versus F class review of One Piece theories. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, rating, reviewing us, wherever you get your podcasts on YouTube at Friends Who One Cast and on Twitter now at FWRP Pod. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Peace.